तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यम् भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो नः प्रचोदयात्। ॐ मे वी मेडिटेट ऑन दैट सुप्रीम बीइंग who dwells in the hearts of all, who is the source and sustenance of this universe, in whom we live, move, and have our being. May He illumine our hearts, and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace. We have been studying the Viveka Chudamani, a crest jewel of discrimination, by Shankara, the great seer philosopher of India. Now we have nearly finished the treatise, though it may take one or two more talks. But in this particular treatise is explained the supreme truth of the identity of the Atman and Brahman. There is that Upanishadic saying or dictum, that thou art. And in this whole treatise, he has explained what it means. Then also pointed out that mere intellectual understanding is not enough, but this is something that we have to realize and experience within our own selves. And what we studied last time is explained in a way, or expressed as much as it is possible to express, that supreme experience of one's identity of the Atman with Brahman. Now before we come to that again, let me explain to you some of the fundamental truths of spiritual life. I have always stressed upon the ideal that religion is a matter of experience or realization. Now again, what is meant by realization or experience? I heard the other day a young girl come to me and said, she has realized God. I said, oh, that's wonderful. Then, of course, she did not understand the meaning of the word realization. Nor did she understand the meaning of the word God. And that is a very difficult thing for ordinary minds to grasp. What is meant by realization? There are different stages of realization or experience of God. The highest experience is what is known as Nirvikalpa Samadhi, the transcendental experience of our identity of the Atman with Brahman, then after that realization, we realize again that this whole universe is nothing but Brahman. There is just one without a second. There are no two. One reality. And that pervades everywhere. The self within me is the self within every being in the universe. And then, what is the nature of that? Full of bliss. But that also, he cannot understand what is meant by bliss. When Christ said, for instance, peace that passeth all understanding. As our mind cannot grasp it. Our mind cannot conceive it. The idea is this. In the first place, what is meant by God? Can anybody define? Can anybody explain? It cannot be. Those again who have experienced God, they point out to us that God is personal, with form or without form, with attributes or without attributes, is impersonal, without any attributes, without any definition or description. And again they point out, is beyond all that. Only when one experiences it, and that experience is not within the ordinary states of consciousness, not while we are awake, nor while we are dreaming, nor while we are deeply asleep. But when we rise, when we transcend these three states of consciousness, then comes the experience. And again in that experience, there are different stages. For instance, you can go into ecstasy. What is ecstasy? This universe disappears from your sight. And you feel the presence of God. And then one can see Him with form. Or one may not see Him with form, but something formless. And one can see Him, see that formless ocean, as it were, full of blissful consciousness. This is ecstasy. Then again, you may have the vision of God, your chosen aspect, but that's not enough. You have to talk to Him. He talks to you. I've seen this in the lives of the great ones. And then again, that's not enough. You become intimate with Him. That's not enough. Then you realize He and I are one. Then the form also melts away into the formless. Then again, what happens in the life of such a soul is very difficult to explain. How he lives, how he acts, how he behaves, nobody can judge and explain. From all external actions and behavior, we'll not recognize. know, God has walked on earth. I mean, manifested God. We are all God. We are all walking on earth, one God. But manifested God means in whom that experience has come. One who has realized, say, a Christ or a Buddha or a Krishna or a Ramakrishna. Such great souls have walked on earth. But how many knew them, recognized them? Very few. Even great sages who had practiced great austerities, who had unfolded great spiritual unfoldment, even they could not recognize sometimes, as we read how Rama, who came as a divine incarnation, and some of the sages came to visit him. And they said to him, Rama, we don't understand about divine incarnation and all that. We know only the one Brahman, one existence. And Rama smiled and said, you are right. And only a few recognized him. And again, let me tell you that the highest experience is when you learn, not learn merely, when you experience that Brahman again as a divine incarnation. Not only you see that Brahman existing everywhere in the universe, but again you see a special manifestation in a divine incarnation. You begin with perhaps divine incarnation, as this Shankara pointed out, whom should we worship? And said, an incarnation of God. And so you recognize that. Through worship, you recognize that. And then again you go beyond that. And then again you come back and then you really understand. So it's a matter of experience. And that experience comes through practice of spiritual disciplines. As Shankara has pointed out that if you simply say no that there is a treasure underneath you, that will not help you. You have to take a shovel, dig and dig until you get hold of that treasure. Similarly, in every one of us there is that buried treasure within us. And we have to dig. What is that digging? Spiritual disciplines. And these disciplines will again differ according to different individuals. So, Shankara in the very beginning points out that through the grace of God, there is this rare combination. Human birth, then desire for that, and then the grace of a guru. Guru is one who is an illumined soul. Now let me again read to you. Just read to you simply because I explained to you. The experience of this disciple. The disciple listened attentively to the words of the of his teacher. He learned the supreme truth of Brahman, to which the scriptures bear witness, and confirmed it by the aid of his own reasoning power. He then withdrew his senses and began to meditate. He then withdrew his senses from the objective world and concentrated his mind upon the Atman. his body appeared as immovable as a rock. His mind was completely absorbed in Brahman. After a while, he returned to normal consciousness. Then out of the fullness of his joy, he spoke. Now here, let me tell you something very funny rather. I think some time back, while I was speaking about samadhi, I learned that one young lady made the remark, if she goes into samadhi, what will happen to her children? We'll take care of them. Well, don't you worry about that. He will take better care of your children. Then out of the fullness of his joy he spoke, the ego has disappeared. I have realized my identity with Brahman, and so all my desires have melted away. I have risen above my ignorance and above my knowledge of this seeming universe. What is this joy that I feel? Who shall measure it? I know nothing but joy, limitless, unbounded. The ocean of Brahman is full of nectar, the joy of the Atman. The treasure I have found there cannot be described in words. The mind cannot conceive it. My mind fell like hailstone into this vast expanse of Brahman's ocean. Touching one drop of it, I melted away and became one with Brahman. And now, though I return to human consciousness, I abide in the joy of the Atman. Where is this universe? Who took it away? Has it merged into something else? A while ago I beheld it, now it exists no longer. This is wonderful indeed. Here is the ocean of Brahman, full of endless joy. How can I accept or reject anything? Is there anything apart or distinct from Brahman? Now finally and clearly I know that I am the Atman, whose nature is eternal joy. I see nothing, I hear nothing, I know nothing that is separate from me. Then the disciple bows down to the teacher. He says, I bow down to you, O great soul, my master. You are free from all attachment, the greatest of the wise and the good. You are the embodiment of eternal bliss. Your compassion is infinite, a sea without a shore. Your eyes are full of mercy. Their glance is like a flood of moonbeams, refreshing the weariness of my mortality, the pain of my bondage to human birth and death. In one instant, by your grace, I have found this inexhaustible, undivided treasure, the Atman, ever blissful. I am blessed indeed. I have achieved life's only purpose. The dragon of rebirth can never seize me now. The infinite is mine. I recognize my true nature in eternal joy. And all this through your mercy. You know what happens? The guru, the teacher, dissolves, first appears, and he points out that is the reality. Saying that, he dissolves himself into that. Then also, the disciple realizes that Guru is no other than God. And Sri Ramakrishna emphasized this always. Who is a guru? There is one guru, Satchidananda, God Himself. A man guru, what is he? Is a pipe through which the water of the same ocean of Brahman comes. Nothing else. Then he again continues to speak of his experience. But in this again, as we read this experience, it is really the nature of the Atman that is described. Nothing binds me to this world. I no longer identify myself with the physical body or the mind. I am one with the Atman, the undying. I am the Atman, infinite, pure, eternal, at peace forever. You know, this is the point to understand also. See, I no longer identify myself with the physical body or the mind. I am one with the Atman. Nothing binds me to this world. I am one with the Atman, the undying. I am the Atman, infinite, pure, eternal, at peace forever. In this connection, let me tell you something. Oftentimes, Vedanta, this truth of Vedanta, is misunderstood as Zen Buddhism. Zen Buddhism and this non-dualistic Vedanta, there is no difference. The modern Zen Buddhists, not all, but some of the, those who are in the forefront rather, who write books on Zen Buddhism and all that, they would tell you, oh, you don't have to do anything. And Vedantists also will tell you, you don't have to do anything, you are Atman, you are God, you are Brahman. What is there to do? Now, one of those I met, and I said, if I pinch you, won't you feel it? Does the Atman feel the pinch? Yes, why not? Then, you know, those of you who have read the life of Ramakrishna will remember how there was one so-called holy man that came there, and he was not living a good life. And then Sri Ramakrishna said, why do you live this way? You have taken the garb of a holy man, why don't you live a pure life? And then this man said, well, is there any reality to this universe? It's all unreal. So what I do is all unreal. I'm the Atman. And then Sri Ramakrishna said, if that is your Vedanta, I spit on Vedanta. So it is misunderstood often. It's a matter of experience. And when the ego is completely wiped out, then you see yourself, you experience yourself everywhere in the universe. And nothing of this world can touch you. Now we become agitated with everything. A little something happens in the world. A little something happens in our body or mind. We identify ourselves with those. And we are sorry, we are worried. But one who has realized, he is living in bliss all the time. You know, Sri Ramakrishna was suffering from cancer on his throat. And then when all the people would come and say, oh, what a suffering, I suffer. And then one of the young disciples came there and told him, you know, how I suffer so much, it's so painful. And then this young disciple said, I don't see you suffering, you are in the ocean of bliss. And then Sri Ramakrishna smiled and said, ah, rascal got my number. And the disciples tell about Sri Ramakrishna in this way. When they were giving him service at night, they would talk, amuse themselves, talk of God, and there's no sickness as it were. But then when other people from outside would come, look how I suffer. You see, they also don't let people catch them. That's the point. They don't let people know them unless they're ready for that. Nothing binds me to the world. I no longer identify myself with the physical body or the mind. I am one with the Atman, the undying. I am the Atman, infinite, pure, eternal, at peace forever. I am neither he who acts nor he who experiences the results of action. I am beyond action and am changeless. My nature is pure consciousness. I am absolute reality, eternal goodness. He acts. He also lives and acts like any of us. But he is not bound by his actions. But all his actions will be righteous, without his knowing that he is doing a good act. Just as a flower gives fragrance, but it doesn't know that he is giving fragrance. So he has no sense that I am good or I am doing good actions. But unchanged, that is his experience. It's not I who see, hear, speak, act, suffer or enjoy. I am the Atman. The body is separate from the body. The body acts, the gunas act. The gunas act upon the gunas, but he is the witness, separate from them. It is not I who see, hear, speak, act, suffer, or enjoy. I am the Atman eternal, ever living, beyond action, unbounded, unattached, nothing but pure, infinite consciousness. This is the nature of the Atman also. In every one of us, there is this Atman, always pure. No matter what you act, what you do, what you think, the true being within yourself is always pure. But because we, in ignorance, we have this sense of ego, so there is the law of karma working. When I act with the sense, I act, I am the doer, naturally I have to either enjoy or suffer for my actions according to the nature of my actions, according to the nature of my thoughts. But again, if I can feel, I am not the doer. There are two attitudes there. One is, I am the Atman, the gunas acting upon gunas. Another attitude of a devotee, I am the machine, he is the operator. I am the house, he is the householder. This idea that I am the doer, That is the cause of all bondage. In other words, ego, sense of ego, is the cause of all our bondages. I am neither the object nor that I am that which makes all objects manifest. I am supreme, eternally pure. I am neither inward nor outward. I am the infinite Brahman, without a second. You see, then there is no question of within or outside. Now, of course, we say meditate within. But you see, when the experience comes, there is no within or without, inside or outside. Well, I'll stop here. I'll invite questions.
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced due to their being off mic during the original recording. Swami, can you explain a little about how one feels that God is doing everything? Isn't that a little dangerous? You act, but you think God is acting?
There is always danger in everything. What is religion? I was taught this, to make the heart and lips the same. Now again, if you can really feel that I am not the doer, then you will not be deceived, you will not be deceiving yourself. So it depends upon your whole attitude. Surely we can fool ourselves and rationalize, but that would not be spirituality. Always remember that, to make the heart and lips the same. Or to quote Shakespeare, be true to yourself. What is the rest? I can't remember.
What is the difference between an incarnation of God, like Ramakrishna, who realized God at the age of 6? Why is he different than someone who realizes God, say, at the age of 60?
Very good question. What is the difference between a divine incarnation and a knower of Brahman? That's the question. Divine incarnation is the descent of God as man to show man how to ascend towards Godhead. And a knower of Brahman, you can be a knower of Brahman, I can be a knower of Brahman, it is the ascent of man towards Godhead. That is fundamentally the difference. Then again, there is a difference this way. I asked one of the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, now you have the same experience as Swami Vivekananda had. He said, yes. Then why is he greater than you? He said, yes, there is a difference. Swami Vivekananda was a big passenger boat. He could carry many passengers to the other shore. But I am a dinghy boat. I can take a few people with me. So there is a difference.
What is meant by a partial incarnation then?
Partial, that is a difficult thing to explain. You know, for instance, Shankaracharya, you see, whose book we have been studying, was known as a partial incarnation. That means there is not the complete manifestation of Godhead. He was a knower of Brahman, but at the same time, he was a greater knower of Brahman in this sense that he could take across more people. So from that standpoint, he was a partial incarnation. In other words, at times, say you are God, I am God, everybody is God also. We are all divine incarnations from one standpoint. But it depends upon the manifestation of power. You see, when Rama came, or when Krishna came, or when Christ came, or when Buddha came, or when Ramakrishna came, you will find, if you analyze, that their powers, manifestation of powers, was different in each case. What was needed at the age, for that age, that's the power that was expressed. But with the change of time and age, the power has to be manifested differently.
Swami, was Jesus Christ the only incarnation who practiced miracles?
That's the problem. I would not say that. It is the way the disciples presented him. In the life of other great teachers also, we know of certain miracles that they performed, but that does not prove the divinity or the incarnation of God. You and I can perform miracles. And the divine incarnations also perform miracles, but the disciples, just put aside those things, and the Guru, the divine incarnation also said, don't mind those things. Those are not the things that are anything of value. Sri Ramakrishna received all the powers, occult powers, and then he saw the futility of those occult powers. And occasionally he did manifest, but that is of no value, not much value. But unfortunately, I'd say that the disciples, not the disciples also, because who wrote the Bible? Years later, from hearsay. And so ordinary people made much of those miracles. And I quoted in Hollywood, I might quote next Sunday, one French philosopher, Rousseau, he said, if those miracles had not been attributed to Jesus, then Jesus would have been worshipped by all people of the world. For instance, Jesus healed. Where are those people now? He raised the dead. Didn't he die again? So what good is that? Or he walked on water, and I have given you the parable of Sri Ramakrishna. One brother came back after 12 years' practice of austerity, and this lay brother said, what have you achieved? He said, come, I'll show you. So both of them went to the river, and he walked on water and went to the other side. And this other brother got a ferry boat, paid a nickel, and went to the other side. And then said, what have you achieved? Worth nickel.
Swami, if Jesus Christ was the messenger of God of his time and was brought to the people for those time and circumstances, then now will God send a messenger for these times and circumstances? And will he be strong enough to cope with the circumstances and problems that we have now?
Yes, very good.
Therefore, that messenger that he sends will turn the majority of people towards him so they will believe?
Wait a minute. I have told again and again, that when the divine incarnation comes, very few people recognize him. After he is gone, centuries later, his power becomes manifest. That is the case with every divine incarnation. A big boat goes. When it goes, there is no splash on the shore. After it has gone away, then the water is agitated and the water splashes every side. So when the divine incarnation comes, very few people recognize. Then centuries later, he becomes known and his power becomes more and more manifested. I pray for desirelessness, but seem to enjoy life more and more as time goes on. Is this good? Well, you know, just to pray for being desireless is not enough. The prayer must be sincere. And why do you want to be desireless? In order that you can grow intense desire for God. It is not something that is negative. It is something very positive. You want to be desireless for the objects and things of enjoyment of the world in order that you can grow an intense desire for God, in whom there is a greater enjoyment and a greater bliss. Of course, you see, you enjoy life more and more, surely, everybody does, until one has that intense desire for God and finds a greater joy, a greater happiness, greater bliss in the very thought of God. When you think of God, you get a thrill out of it, which nothing can give you. And so, when you come to that, then you become desireless. So it's nothing negative, but be positive. Grow that intense desire for God. And then just say, I want nothing else, I want nothing else, I want nothing else but Thee.
Sahanau funaktu sahavīryam karvāvahai tejasvinavadhitamastu mā vidviṣāvahai. Om. May Brahman protect us. May he guide us. May he give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all. May our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace.